In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Thursday, October 6, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's Industry Chatter, and my guest on the program today is the new CEO for the public sector at Quest Software, Paul Christman. Paul, pleasure to have you in the studio. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me. Good afternoon.
Happy to do it. You have not been on the job very long at Quest. Is that correct?
I've been with Quest almost 6 years, new to this particular role about two months.
All right. Well, congratulations on that. Talk about what your company does for federal customers.
Well, we're obviously a software company. Quest Software makes prepackaged commercial off-the-shelf software that helps IT professionals reduce the cost of computing. We do that in three ways, increasing automation of routine tasks, things that need to be done in IT. We reduce complexity. IT is getting increasingly complex, and what we're really trying to do is to reduce that complexity for the IT operations manager. And we're also trying to extend existing IT platforms, help people save money by making things last longer or do more things.
The explosion in interest in COTS software in government over the last 2 to 5 years has been driven primarily by costs, but there are other reasons that agencies are looking at it too, aren't there?
Sure. It's about manageability. It's about first acquisition costs, how quickly you can get something done, but it's also about the total cost of ownership over time. Increasingly, people are looking at what it costs to run things, how long you have to run them. And it's the traditional build-buy decision.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd rather buy it than build it because they understand that the management of it long-term and the maintenance of it long-term really just is where all the ongoing costs are.
Is it only the budget pressures that we've seen over the last couple of years that are driving agencies to at least look at it, at off-the-shelf software, where for a long time there seemed to be kind of a level of resistance there? We need to have our own special thing because we do our own special thing.
Yeah, it's a belief that it's semi-finished goods.
Mm-hmm.
You have to tailor to the federal space. You have to tailor to the public sector space. But you've got to get 80, 90% of the way there. That's part of my job right now is to help our company understand where the commercial product needs to be tailored specific to the federal market for either a particular directive or a particular requirement in the federal space.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that Quest is recognized as that's special. And so we've put people and money behind defining what those characteristics are for the federal space and then going ahead and developing for them.
Mm-hmm. As you look across the agencies that you're doing business with now and you look at the agencies where you'd like to do more business, where do you see opportunities for off-the-shelf software from the agency perspective where agency people maybe aren't thinking that that might be a solution?
That's a good question, and it's really around what used to be the idea that it had to be perfect before it was bought.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be a 4-inch deep RFP and RFQ and an RFI and all the rest of these things. It took forever for the technology to be defined and then acquired. More often than not, you hear the horror stories about some project that's 15, 20 years behind schedule and 400% over budget.
Right.
Well, what folks are realizing now is you can get 80% of the way there. And that's really where commercial off-the-shelf software helps. So you get 80% of the way there, and sometimes 80% of the way is better than trying to wait to get to 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things we're doing around identity management and cybersecurity, it's not 100% every last little feature that somebody wanted, but it's good.
Mm-hmm.
It gets implemented quickly, and the time to value is something that they can see and something they can demonstrate to either legislative money purse strings holders,
right,
or what you can see is a quick, rapid return on an IT investment.
Well, now, we've talked about the 80 to 90% solution in government for a long time, but what's taken so long for agencies to be willing to accept that, do you think?
To be honest, it's you have to fail in order to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we as a company, a software company, we approach some of our customers and we elect not to do business with them because we realize that the requirements that they've set are so high that they're setting themselves up for failure.
Mm-hmm.
And we counsel them, we tell them, and at some point in time, we disengage.
Yeah,
it's a very sad thing to see because as an American taxpayer, I'd rather not see that failure. But sometimes people get a little bit lost.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people forget that they should try and get stuff a little bit done rather than go for the big bang. At that point, after they failed, sometimes they're a lot more receptive to scaling back the projects, to being more realistic about their requirements, not say to be negligent, but to be more realistic.
Mm-hmm. I've talked about the requirements process with a lot of people in industry and a lot of people in agencies over the last couple of years. Where do you see the disconnects now in the requirements process overall? Obviously not at a specific agency, but overall, where are the tough parts?
In terms of defining projects?
Any of them. And any of the issues that revolve particularly around requirements?
For us, it's really getting away from the belief that everything is unique to the particular agency.
Mm-hmm.
The belief that nobody else has faced with the same challenges and that they have to document ad nauseum the uniqueness of their being in order to justify their existence.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the problems, a lot of the technical challenges, a lot of the management issues within the public sector, broadly defined, whether it's the feds, the states, the locals, educational institutions, a lot of them are the same as are being faced in the commercial industry, mm-hmm. around security, things around credit card information that needs to be secured, identity and access management, again, what we talked about a second ago. Those challenges are the same. Now, the information behind the security might be different, but the need for the security is the same. And sometimes the mandates are exactly the same. Around healthcare, for instance, they're exactly the same on the commercial side.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to invent something new for the government.
I find that fascinating because it seems to me that's as much a management or leadership issue as it is a technology issue.
Mm-hmm.
Being content with the fact that somebody else has been down this road before, and I'm not the very first person, we're not the very first agency that has ever dealt with this exact particular problem before.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that. I've just came back from the National Association of State CIOs conference, or annual conference, out in Denver, and we spent the last 4 days, and all 50 states are represented there. And the states, I think, very, very readily admit that their challenges are exactly the same. And the good thing that I've seen lately is that there's more state-federal interaction, and the states are willing to share, and the feds are actually willing to learn from the states. Before, they thought that the states were sort of JV, you know, second tier,
yeah.
second string.
Mm-hmm.
Now the feds are actually learning from the states, and so there's this belief that what happened in California or what's happening in Michigan could translate into Department of Defense.
Yeah. Where do you think that's come from? Because that I've heard that from other people. I mean, I've heard one of the most popular people in government was Terry Takei when she came in,
mm-hmm.
because people wanted to know how she did different things in California.
And Terry and I've known Terry for years when she was the CIO for Michigan. She then moved to California, and then after California, obviously moved back here to DOD. Vivek Kundra, former mm-hmm. federal CIO, former CIO for the City of the District of Columbia. There's crossovers all along the way. The former CIO for the state of Colorado is actually now with the Department of Energy. So there's some crossovers, and there's the belief that managing the state of California's IT infrastructure, although not quite as large as the DOD, requires the same skills.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of political savvy, a lot of challenges getting money from the legislature, a lot of sort of cheerleading, but a lot of implementing as well.
Hmm.
Those skills are translatable. Those skills are the same regardless of what jurisdiction you're in.
I'd like to pick your brain a little bit later in the program about NASIO, because I think there's not enough of that kind of crossover. It is getting better, as you said. I've seen that too, but not as much as there probably could be, and I want to talk about that a little bit more. We're going to continue our conversation with Paul Christman of Quest Software when Industry Chatter continues in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This week's Experts in Health topic is prostate health, featuring Dr. Antonio Michel, urologist with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group at the Kaiser Permanente Falls Church Medical Center.
Prostate cancer is the most common cancer in men. While the causes of prostate cancer are unknown, risk factors such as age, race, ethnicity, and family history may increase a man's chance of getting prostate cancer. Prostate cancer is most commonly found in men age 65 or older and occurs in African American men more frequently than men of any other race. Prostate cancer is usually curable when detected early. Regular health checkups, including a digital rectal exam of the prostate and a PSA blood test, are vital to early detection. We at Kaiser Permanente encourage men to be proactive about their health and maintain regular health checkups with their doctor. Be well and thrive.
To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's experts in health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
Calling all government, military, and defense industry executives, the Association of the United States Army invites you to attend its 57th annual meeting and exposition.
Held October 10th through the 12th at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, AUSA's annual meeting is one of the largest land warfare forums in the world.
Companies will gather to display the latest defense technology, and forums will be held for soldiers, family, government defense civilians, and industry executives.
Admission is free but limited to qualified persons. For more information, visit AUSA.org.
Facing a new day, delivering services efficiently, improving citizens' lives, Booz Allen Hamilton supports the most important challenges of government, from defense and economic security to health and cyber solutions. Booz Allen strategy and technology consultants partner with clients to deliver results that endure. Whether managing today's issues or looking beyond the horizon, clients can count on Booz Allen to help them be ready for what's next. BoozAllen.com/ready for what's next.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Army's Information Technology Agency says it has lessons to share with other agencies on data center consolidation. ITA is the technology service provider for the entire Pentagon. Since the 1990s, ITA has already reduced the Pentagon's computing footprint from 45,000 square feet to 15,000. ITA says there's a lot more work to do, but they've already increased virtualization capacity by 30% and reduced software licensing by 10%.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Friday morning's Federal Drive. We're going to learn more about those specialized engineers who were rappelling down the Washington Monument. How did the National Park Service find them, and how was that contract hammered out? And we'll talk with Dwight Ink about the book he co-edited, Transforming American Governance, Rebooting the Public Square. That and more Friday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Paul Christman of Quest Software is my guest on Industry Chatter today. We talked a little bit in the first segment, Paul, about requirements and some of the challenges that agencies run up against requirements. And you talked about consulting from time to time with a potential customer. And there are times where you back away from a situation that you might otherwise have gotten involved with. One of the things that Dan Gordon has talked about in his Mythbusters campaign is encouraging a lot more communication like that to avoid that exact situation. When you look at what Dan has talked about with Mythbusters, do you see that getting through to the agencies, or do you still see as many instances as you did before of what you're talking about where agencies hesitate to communicate with the vendors ahead of time?
The real challenge, it's a good question, because one of the things we hear is the desire to have it change, but then in practice it really becomes very challenging, especially when IT professionals then get involved with the procurement professionals.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes the information that they'd like to share and the things that they'd like to do for a good reason, and the procurement regulations are there for a good reason, not trying to circumvent them,
mm-hmm.
but that stops the flow of information. And all of a sudden it becomes very rigid, it becomes very structured, and it very, very prescribed. And that free flow of dialogue back and forth between people that I would say have the power to make a decision,
mm-hmm.
and the people who are then empowered to carry it out, that dialogue stops.
Mm-hmm.
And what you have is a very stilted conversation rather than the back and forth. The one thing that I always like to do as a sales leader is to get the right people in the room who have the authority to make the decisions and to have a give-and-take discussion rather than this asynchronous, I write something, you read something, you mm-hmm. mark it up, your attorneys look at it, your procurement people look at it. That asynchronous kind of communication really gets in the way of getting stuff done, and I really try and put those people in the room. It gets very difficult to do after a while.
Yeah, but it strikes me as necessary. As you were talking, I just wrote up this very basic flow chart, mm-hmm. and it starts at the top with the end user, and then it goes to the IT professional, and then to the acquisition professional, and then the vendor. Mm-hmm. And if you just think about this from, like, the third grade whisper game theory, by the time you go from the end user to the vendor with those two people who have the best of intentions and who are professionals, it seems to me there's bound to be some kind of problem, and maybe we shouldn't be surprised that so many of these projects go awry.
And the telephone game that you play and you pass it down, and by the time it comes out the other end, you're talking about two entirely different things.
Mm-hmm.
I really, a little bit ago in my past lives before I came to Quest, I actually spent a year selling procurement systems to the government. And in doing so, I had to spend a full 12 months of my every waking hour talking to procurement professionals.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is good. It protects the taxpayer. It actually is in place for a reason. It is really, really difficult sometimes to convey that to the technology folks. It's hard to take both sides of that telephone game
mm-hmm.
and understand what's going in and what's coming out the other side. But having done that for a while, I appreciate what they're trying to do. I don't ever want to say that I would say it's good to slow things down, but sometimes it is good to slow things down.
Mm-hmm.
We make better decisions sometimes when we've thought about them for a bit. I can tell you in working with procurement officials from Sacramento to New York to Washington to all over the country, after a little while, it just gets in the way. There's not a need to make everything complicated. And some of the things that we're trying to do around contracts that our products and services are available on, the partnerships we make with other publishers or manufacturers or systems integrators, those sorts of partnerships can make it easier for the acquisition as well as easier for the technologists to achieve what they're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm. You say that sometimes it's good to slow things down, and I don't know of anybody that would argue with that, but I wonder if one of the unintended consequences of the 25-point plan and the move to agile development and we're going to be text-adding you and so on and so forth, it isn't the compression of that timeline where people don't necessarily feel that it is good to slow things down sometimes and take your time and really understand what you're about to get into.
I think there's a right place and a right time for slow, and there's a right place and a right time for urgency. The best example that I saw back during 9/11 was the acquisitions that were possible within the city of New York, because that was one of my customers, understanding that they had to buy things quickly to repair, to get the city back alive.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just on the commercial side. It wasn't just the corporations that were hurt. It was the Port Authority. It was the city of New York. It was the data centers that were nearby. They knew they had to bypass all of that. And that's mm-hmm. that was a once-in-a-generation issue. That sense of urgency, we need to respond to.
Mm-hmm.
We do not need to make it as difficult as it is right now. We should be able to buy simple, straightforward, off-the-shelf, commercially available technology like Quest Software makes. We should be able to buy that on a variety of contracts without having to go through 60 pages of the same boilerplate legalese stuff every single time.
The parallel on the federal level is the MRAP. I mean, the Pentagon figured out a way to get those vehicles yep. to Iraq quickly when it was literally a matter of life and death. They were able to cut through all of that and develop kind of this alternative parallel universe almost mm-hmm. to be able to do that. And I wonder why we don't see more of that when it's not a matter of life and death, but when it's a matter of a lot of money right. and important functions in government.
Well, there's two things I'd say to that. One, one person's pork project is another person's profit.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the things that happen, there are spinoffs and other benefits to people who make money at it. And there is a vested interest in doing that. The second thing, and I think a lot of our political situation now, don't want to get into a political discussion, but a lot of our politics right now, the answer and the solution isn't readily known. When we have a problem with armored vehicles, the solution is readily known. Go buy more armored vehicles. Go get them there quickly. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, bad things happen to good people. When it comes to budget, it all depends on, well, when's the money going to be spent? Whose money is it? Is that within budget? And it becomes much less clear what the objective is. I think when we collectively in the public sector have a clear mission, mm-hmm. we're fabulous. When we have a sense of urgency, we're wonderful. When we have an emergency, we respond quickly. But when the solution's not necessarily known, we get very, very tangled up in a lot of bureaucracy.
A good friend of mine who's in the federal IT space, formerly on the government side, now on the vendor side, told me the other day that there are three letters that explain that, and it's the letters are CYA. I mean, is that fair, do you think?
Fair enough. I try and be, well, maybe when I was a little bit younger, I didn't believe this, but I believe that most everybody has good intentions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily agree with the value system that they're using in order to make their decisions, but I have to see things from their perspective. Again, CYA has its place. Doing something so you don't end up on the front page of the Post, well, that maybe can help you do things more efficiently, more effectively. If it becomes a means and an ends all unto itself, I would disagree with it, obviously. But there are reasons there is bureaucracy. There is a reason that the bureaucracy goes slowly. We are stewards of the taxpayers' money. That sort of thing we don't take lightly. When we sell things, we believe we have a good value to our customers. If we don't, all the transparency and openness that's been advocated lately really should come into play. The media should exploit it. The media should expose it. Those sorts of things should come through.
Paul Crispin's my guest. He's with Quest Software, and he's my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
Will U.S. troops who stay in Iraq to train forces have immunity from local prosecution? It's a big issue and may be a deal breaker as the U.S. and Iraq discuss a future status of forces agreement. Iraqi leaders say immunity is not necessary. In fact, Iraqi government spokesman Ali al-Dabbagh said in his own words, no agreement on immunity, no agreement on the number of trainers. The 2008 agreement expires at the end of the year and all U.S. forces are supposed to leave the country. I'm J.J. Green.
911, what's your emergency?
Every day, EADS North America supports homeland security and defense missions here at home and around the globe. Whether it's responding to emergencies or disasters, providing military helicopters, or systems that patrol and secure our borders and coastlines, EADS North America delivers on our promises every day. EADS North America, commitment defines us.
Do you know us? We employ more than 70,000 people in more than 800 locations throughout the United States. Through our network of suppliers, we indirectly enable tens of thousands of American jobs. Tens of thousands. Jobs that put food on the table. Jobs that put kids through college. Jobs that keep our economy going. And yet, many of you don't even know who we are. Our name is United Technologies. We are Carrier, Hamilton Sunstrand, Otis, Pratt & Whitney, Sikorsky, and UTC Fire and Security. Six businesses united as one powerful company. We may be the biggest unknown company in America, but our jobs power the economy, and our technologies, products, and services power the world. United Technologies. Get to know more about us at UTC.com.
We live in uncertain times. More than ever, federal agencies rely on TASC to accomplish the most important missions and protect America's way of life. Few in the world can do what the experts at TASC do. Trusted partners, honest counselors, TASC's highly specialized problem solvers use rare knowledge and deep experience to provide advanced systems engineering, integration, and decision support services that the U.S. government depends on to keep the country safe and secure. TASC, working for you and the nation. TASC.com.
Cancer by sex. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfus with HHS HealthBeat. Men and women can develop forms of cancer specific to their sex, but there are screening tests for some of these cancers. For women, the Pap test for cervical cancer can find abnormal cells that could become cancerous in time for treatment that could prevent cervical cancer from developing. For men, there is the PSA test for prostate cancer, but this test doesn't give quite so clear results. So Dr. Janaba Joseph of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says men should talk with their doctors about it.
If they do choose to have it, most men should start at the age of 50, but some men are at high risk, such as men with a family history of prostate cancer or African-American men who may need to start at an earlier age.
Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfus.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Paul Christman of Quest Software, my guest on Industry Chatter today. We talked a little bit about requirements, and I drew my little flow chart and everything. I should actually like PDF that or something and put it up on FederalNewsRadio.com.
Trademark that and see if you can get paid for that. That looks nice. Nobody's ever thought that way before, Francis.
I'm sure nobody's ever done this. I have a promising career as a consultant in front of me. But is it really that simple? Is it really that? I mean, because I know I'm boiling it down pretty basic, and it can't be that simple, can it?
Within each one of those phrases, like contracting, procurement, or IT, each one of those boxes could have five other boxes within it, depending on the agency, depending on the procurement, depending on the vehicle. We have professional salespeople whose jobs it is to understand this, and it's different whether you're talking to Justice or Army or State, any of those agencies, it's altogether different, and people make a very good living at understanding how to decipher that particular flow chart and make it work.
Is that part of the problem that you were talking about before, about it being so complicated and it doesn't have to be?
Partially. The real thing that we're challenged with is having customers really understand their side, and then we can map to it. Sometimes, I hate to say this, sometimes we are teaching the IT professionals what their own procurement process is because they don't have an idea on how it works. The other thing that's really becoming very, very challenging for us collectively on both sides of the desk, whether it's an IT professional or a vendor, is understanding the budgeting stream. And in the federal space, especially lately, budgeting has become a real, real challenge. The uncertainty around budget, where's it coming from? What programs it attached to? Can it be taken away? Will it be taken away? All those things are adding a level of uncertainty that makes the whole process just that much more difficult.
Is there a place for the contracting community, you think, to interact with Congress and try to educate it about that kind of a difficulty? Because that's really where it comes down to. I mean, the fact that we're in 58,000 continuing resolutions, and you look at the FAA, I don't know if the FAA is a customer of yours or not. But
yes, they are.
You're very well aware of what's going on there when it comes to funding. I mean, that's really, it strikes me where the problem is as far as the funding goes. And you're not the first person to say this winds up causing problems. People have told me that agencies spend more than the cuts that members of Congress try to achieve when CRs go through.
And that sort of spend or lose, or spend it when you have it, rather than spend it judiciously, because it's the hoarding mentality and it's the mob mentality when there's a perception of scarcity. It's what drives mobs into rampaging, trampling masses. That's not good. The uncertainty around the forecast for budget really drives people to do unnatural acts. I can tell you right now, if the collective community of suppliers, both contractors, prime contractors, large contractors, and also the manufacturers, publishers, technology people got together, it would be very, very different than what would happen at the state level. The state level, it's very collegial. We have a lot of people talking about what's effective in various places. By and large, you can get stuff done across state boundaries. In the Fed space, it's winner take all. It's one shot. You have this contract, you lose, you go home.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of centralization makes the community, I think, a little bit more competitive instead of, especially in the state and local or even in education space. The education space, we're all friends.
Mm-hmm.
We're all friends. We're trying to get something done in a very, very tough economy. Those sorts of places, I think there's more opportunity for the community to come together in a cooperative way. You'll see more cooperation there rather than competition there, mm-hmm, amongst the suppliers.
I imagine those are many situations where you don't know when you're going to be teaming with somebody that at this point in time is your competitor, but 10 minutes from now might be somebody that you're working very closely with for a different customer.
And the benefit there is you always have to worry about your reputation. You always have to worry about what you did. And you know you're going to be seeing these folks. I mentioned I was at the NASIO conference earlier this week. And for me, it's part seeing our customers and clients, but it's also seeing all of my friends who happen to work in that particular part of the public sector business and figuring out what company they're at.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of them stay in that vertical and they move from company to company.
Mm-hmm.
They'll move from software publisher to hardware manufacturer or from sometimes they'll actually move from the public sector side into the private sector side.
Mm-hmm.
But it is very much of a federation. It's a collection of professionals that work in that business, and we all feel very compelled to make it better.
Now, Secretary Gates, before he left DOD, and Secretary Lynn, before he left, talked about that idea, and Secretary Carter's talked about it a little bit too, the idea of kind of shaping or molding the defense procurement, the contracting community. Does that make sense for other parts of the federal contracting community? But that seems a little bit different than what you're talking about. It seems like it's kind of actually 180 degrees the opposite, where they're determining how the landscape will, or not determining, but having a big say in how the landscape will look.
I think they're going to lead. They're going to encourage. I think especially the procurements on the DOD side, the technology procurements for office products, the non-combat systems, is so small compared to the, you know, forward-facing, you know, sharp tip of the spear part of the business.
Mm-hmm.
Their procurement challenges really are in how do you get a joint strike fighter out.
Mm-hmm.
And those sorts of things dwarf anything that we can do on the technology side. The integration of standard office automation, that's fairly straightforward. But I think the real problem to tackle in the DOD space is on the other side. It's on the combat systems.
Mm-hmm.
They're fantastically expensive and altogether necessary, but that's not where we play.
But are there lessons to learn from the way they do things on the IT side, or is it just so wildly different that it's not applicable?
I think they're pretty different. I think that the most publicized case, the tanker contract,
mm-hmm,
again, that was a winner-take-all. They tried to split the baby, but that wasn't going to work. Somebody was going to win that contract, and it meant an awful lot of jobs. It meant an awful lot of money. Very different. Very different in the technology, especially in the standard commercial technology that we offer.
I mentioned earlier that I want to pick your brain about NASIO and do some comparisons and contrasts. Let's do that when we come back from the break. Paul Christman of Quest Software, my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
It seeks and finds the enemy before the enemy knows he's been found. Detects targets from safe standoff range, day or night, rain or shine, through dust, smoke, and enemy countermeasures. Locks on targets and destroys them. It is JAGM, the Joint Air-to-Ground Missile. Designed by Lockheed Martin, JAGM owes its accuracy to its fourth-generation cooled tri-mode seeker, which allows its three sensors to operate as a single all-seeing eye, simultaneously and collaboratively sharing information, delivering firepower with surgical precision, saving lives. Lockheed Martin's JAGM, builds on decades of experience designing, producing, integrating, and supporting air-to-ground missiles, and more than 10 years of the most rigorous testing. JAGM, mature, ready, affordable, proven. From Lockheed Martin, we never forget who we're working for.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris.
Christy Romero is acting inspector general for the Troubled Asset Relief Program. Investigators say they might have relaxed the rules for banks trying to get out of TARP.
The regulators really have to remain vigilant against all these banks' demands to relax the capital requirements. There's this big rush to get these big banks out, but we've got a lot of smaller community banks, more than 400 still left in TARP. And what is the clear exit path for those banks?
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Paul Christman of Quest Software is my guest on Industry Chatter today. And you mentioned earlier in the program you were at the NASIO conference recently. That's the National Association of State CIOs. Chief Information Officers.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah, it is. It's quite a business card for whoever works there. What do you see happening in the states that is something? You talked about a few things that are useful on the federal level, but what are some of the contracting mechanisms or something like that that you're seeing at the state level that might be something we should pay attention to in Washington?
I think the best lesson to learn is that you don't have to invent it yourself. That not invented here mentality is finally breaking down in the states. It's breaking down in the states because of the financial pressures that they're all under. They're really starting to come together in collectives or consortiums across the traditional jurisdictional boundaries that have separated contracts. Used to be you'd have a state contract in New York, you'd have a state contract in California, you'd have a state contract in Texas, and they wouldn't have anything to do with each other. Now they're starting to realize there's some economies of scale, both from an administrative overhead for contracts, but also in the price points that they can negotiate with the vendors. They're seeing benefit in this consortium buying. Those sorts of contracts, I think, are very, very attractive for publishers like Quest, because we only have to administer one.
Mm-hmm.
It's very attractive for the states because they can borrow, if you would, the administrative overhead from their colleagues. It works very, very well. The availability of commercial off-the-shelf software like ours really is instantaneous, and it can be spread across multiple states without having to go through an awful lot of onerous negotiations and terms and conditions. Those sorts of things I wish the feds would look at a little bit closer, a little bit more difficult. We're seeing the availability of Quest products on several GWACs aside from our traditional GSA contract buys. We're starting to diversify that, but we wish we could do more.
And I understand why. You want to be as many different places as there may be potential customers. But that's happening at the same time that the Dan Gordons of the world are saying, hey, wait a minute. You have to give me a business case before you go out and do your own. The not invented here mentality seems to be still pretty prevalent in the federal government.
I would point to my former employer, Microsoft, and an example that they've had in several states. They went into the Commonwealth of Virginia, a few miles to the south, and said, we'd like to consolidate all this stuff. The governor had an initiative to streamline all that. So they went to Microsoft and said, how many contracts do you have? I think they had over 30 different enterprise agreements with Microsoft just within the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Mm.
That was done of their own accord. They didn't need 37 contracts with Microsoft. Now they have one. The same inventory of contracts should be possible either by publisher or by technology group, and it should be possible to streamline all of this stuff. Even within an agency, there's got to be some economies of scale to reduce the intra-agency or just duplicate or deduplication and redundancy.
Mm-hmm. Is that a contracting issue? Is that a management issue? Or is it a fiefdom issue, do you think?
I don't think it's any of those. I think it's a knowledge issue. A lot of people didn't know that those other contracts exist. And to be candid, as publishers, we'll do what we need to do in order to get the business done. And sometimes that means just creating a new contract because it's the most expedient way to get some sort of transaction done.
Mm-hmm.
After a little while, you've got to put it all in the same room, sort out all the stuff, and then standardize. And that happens over time. But it's a lack of knowledge, either on the manufacturer side, because it was different time, different place, different part of the agency, or it's a simple situation where the agency's so large, they're not talking to each other.
Where should an effort like that live, do you think, at a federal agency? If I'm the chief acquisition officer at Department of the fill in the blank, and I want to, and I'm listening to you, and I'm going, you know what, he's exactly right, and we're going to start doing that today.
So if you looked at the 25-point plan from Vivek Kundra, former CIO, one of them was this concept of working with the legislature or working in statute to centralize the budgetary authority of the agency CIO. The problem that we've got is a lot of these technology purchases don't happen within a quote-unquote technology budget. They happen someplace in a program. If the IT is consolidated, the IT spend and the budget is consolidated within the agency, then you have visibility. Then you can see the redundancy. But until you get a handle on the money and the money flows, you're not going to see it.
So that effort actually should start in the CFO's office, probably.
Yes. That's probably the only place you're going to see all those redundants come together, mm-hmm. the redundancies come together.
So this becomes a whole C-level exercise and not just the acquisition job.
Yes. Strategic sourcing, broadly defined, contracting being part of that, selection of technology, those sorts of things is definitely a cabinet-level decision.
Mm-hmm.
And more than ever, the technology decisions are impacting and bleeding over into what I'll call the mission objectives. You can't separate one from the other, but you have to have a strong centralized IT leadership with budgetary authority and visibility in order to make that integration between the mission and the information technology support happen.
I want to go back to that consortium idea that you were talking about because it sounds like the way that GSA was originally intended to operate, and there are a number of people that have said GSA has gotten away from that, and especially with the proliferation of individual programs at agencies, NASA SOUP and all of these others. What will have to happen to kind of push that to reshape or, I guess, shape again the structure the way that it was originally intended, maybe to look more like that? Or doesn't it matter? Is that not that important in the federal space, do you think?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned the GSA contract, Francis, because one of the things that's happening is the GSA is reaching out for new customers.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last few years, they really have started to realize that the customer, the IT customer, is creating new vehicles because they have to, because they feel that they're getting a better value someplace else. And so the push to move away from GSA contracting has really created this secondary market. So the GSA's moved into a sales role. And who are they selling to? They're selling to the states. And the states are looking at the GSA and saying, why should I go with you? The GSA has moved more into this proactive, I need to be competitive with the other contracts, and we'll see who wins. Mm-hmm. And from that perspective, I'm very, very glad to see that these contracts are competing with each other. As a taxpayer, I'm really glad to see that those efficiencies, necessity being the mother of invention, moving to those other kinds of contract vehicles has made GSA respond because it was getting to be, hey, it's GSA or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
The monolithic organization had gotten very bureaucratic and nothing like a little competition to scare a monopoly.
When we come back, we talked a lot about where we are today and your observations about the market as it stands. I'd like to talk a little bit about where you think things might be headed, both for your company and for the government at large on industry chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Paul Christman of Quest Software, my guest. We'll be back in just a moment.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments.
Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
This week's Experts in Health topic is prostate health, featuring Dr. Antonio Michel, urologist, with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group at the Kaiser Permanente Falls Church Medical Center.
Prostate cancer is the most common cancer in men. While the causes of prostate cancer are unknown, risk factors such as age, race, ethnicity, and family history may increase a man's chance of getting prostate cancer. Prostate cancer is most commonly found in men age 65 or older and occurs in African-American men more frequently than men of any other race. Prostate cancer is usually curable when detected early. Regular health checkups, including a digital rectal exam of the prostate and a PSA blood test, are vital to early detection. We at Kaiser Permanente encourage men to be proactive about their health and maintain regular health checkups with their doctor. Be well and thrive.
To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's Experts in Health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
By the latest second-generation Intel Core processors, new HP ProLiant GS servers are an ideal choice for reducing power costs and getting a jump on your cloud computing initiatives. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how the power of HP and Intel can achieve ROI in as little as 2 months. Talk to GovConnection and find out how together they can power your data center into the future. Call 800-800-0019 today.
Hi, this is Michelle Moore, the Federal Environmental Executive. I'd like to invite you to join us at the 2011 GreenGov Symposium, co-hosted by the White House Council on Environmental Quality and the Association of Climate Change Officers, for 3 days of cutting-edge educational sessions on the business of sustainability and greening the government. Connect with more than 1,000 of your peers at this year's GreenGov from October 31st to November 2nd in Washington, D.C. For more information and to register online, visit greengov2011.org.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Paul Christman of Quest Software, my guest on Industry Chatter today. And I mentioned we've talked a lot about where government is today and where your company is today. If we get together a year, 2 years, 5 years from now, where do you see, what is the trend line that you think IT and government is on? Or maybe it's even hard to say because of the uncertainty that we talked about budget issues earlier.
Well, I think there's two parts. One, the next 12 months, tremendously uncertain. The difficulty in predicting and forecasting budgets and the resulting business on my side that comes out of those budgets is more difficult than ever. I think post-election next year, things are going to get a little bit clearer. At the very macro, very long-term, five-year look, we're certainly going to see a drawdown of the DOD just because of the reduction in forces, active duty forces, the reduction in the DOD will probably parallel an increase in health information spending. And the other part that we think is going to increase in the long term relative to the other parts of the federal government is intelligence. So it's going to be reblending away from the active DOD to more of the intelligence and security side of things and probably more towards the civilian side. But those changes are going to be very, very muddled until the election's over next November.
The trend line sounds similar to what the government went through in the mid-90s, but the markers, I guess, look a little bit different, at least to me. Do they to you?
Well, the overhanging issue of the whole situation is the economy. And especially in the other parts of the public sector group that I'm responsible for, and that's education and state and local, the economy is going to drive so much of it there.
Mm-hmm.
The federal government may be required in some way, shape, or form to help that part of the public sector again. It's going to be very, very difficult politically, obviously, with the Congress the way it is and with the presidential election looming over us. But those very, very long-term shifts away from active DOD into intelligence, into more healthcare spending, and hopefully more education spending, which is a long-term investment for the economy, those sorts of things I'm looking at for our group and trying to invest ahead of those curves to try and put personnel in place to try and tap into those emerging markets.
I have a lot more questions, and unfortunately I don't have a lot more time, but I'm really grateful for you being here today. I've enjoyed our conversation very much, Paul.
Thanks very much.
Paul Crispin is with Quest Software, my guest on Federal News Radio 1500 AM on Industry Chatter. You can hear this conversation posted online later this afternoon on federalnewsradio.com, linked up on the in-depth page. Coming up in just a few minutes, you don't have to be in government forever to be an award winner. You'll meet a award winner at the front end of his career when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll be right back.